The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Charlie Lung stars in El Lobo Rides Again. We'll also hear about the ghost of Keelan Pond on Spotlight Story, and the house on Lost Man's Bluff on a chilling episode of The Hermit's Cave. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, the ghost of Keelan Pond on Spotlight Story, and the house on Lost Man's Bluff on a chilling episode of The Hermit's Cave. But first, Charlie Lung stars in El Lobo Rides Again as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Charlie Lung, the man of 100 voices, in his new Western series, El Lobo Rides Again.
Underlay! Underlay! Hasta, my black beauty! Hasta! Hasta, Lorena, faster! Run like the wind!
Charlie Lung, the man of 100 voices, brings you another thrilling Western story of El Lobo, foe of evil, defender of right. The story of Lightning Draw Lobo and his mighty black mare, Lorena, fastest horse in all Mexico. In just a moment, the action-packed story of The Ambush, but first...
Calcium helps grown-ups to a more vigorous life.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps your body run smoothly.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps you to enjoy a more active life.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Yes, a 1 ounce serving contains 1/3 of your daily calcium needs. And post-wheat meal is a whole wheat cereal, creamy, smooth, delicious, cooks instantly. Get new post-wheat meal with more calcium than any other cereal, hot or cold.
Today's story of the Old West opens in the little cow town of Lone Pine, Arizona, near the Mexican border. Its one claim to notoriety is the Silver Dollar Gambling Casino, rendezvous of gunmen, gamblers, and riffraff from both sides of the border. Our scene opens in the lavish office of its gambler owner, Ace Kimball, who looks up from his desk to greet his evil henchman, Steve Cody, who stands at the door.
Well, there you are, Steve Cody. Come in, come in. Close the door, Cody.
Yeah, sure, Ace, anything you say. Well, what's on your mind, Ace?
The Lazy Y Ranch.
Shucks, so you're still hankering to get your hands on the Lazy Y, huh?
I want to possess that ranch more than anything else in Arizona. And you know, when Ace Kimball decides he wants anything, he always gets it, no matter the cost.
Why, sure, but you... If in that old coot gold pan Jeffers who owns it don't want to sell, then your money ain't going to do you much good, is it?
I don't remember mentioning money, Cody. This deal calls for a six-gun.
Well, now you're talking my lingo. Who'd you want fitted for a wooden overcoat this time?
An Indian.
Huh? An Indian? Why does an Indian fit in?
Very simple, Cody. You know of Chief Big Horse and his son Running Deer.
Why, sure. Big Horse is chief of them Ojibwa tribe.
You'll be waiting on the canyon rim above them.
Yeah?
And a well-placed bullet will knock young Running Deer off his horse.
Consonities. I get it. Them Indians are going to think they was ambushed by a Lazy Y rider.
Right, Cody.
Then them redskins will hit the warpath. and kill every man on the Lazy Y.
Steve Cody, gunslinger and bad man, hurries out to the hitch rack that fronts the Silver Dollar Casino. Quickly, he leaps into the saddle and swings his powerful buckskin toward the south. His flushed face twists into a cruel grin as he rides madly for Rattlesnake Canyon to keep his rendezvous with death. He dismounts, pulls a rifle from the saddle scabbard, then inches his way cautiously to the canyon rim's edge. Far below, he sees Chief Big Horse, his son Running Deer, and the Indian Braves riding slowly into the narrow defile.
Well, if this ain't gonna be just like shooting fish in a rain barrel. How to get Running Deer in my sights. Like this, and pull the trigger. Got him, first shot. Now to get out of here. This ain't gonna be no place for a white man for quite a while. Steady, steady, consigna! Now get to running and fast. Ha, ha, stretch, ha, ha.
The remorseless Steve Cody, convinced his cowardly shot will fulfill its vicious promise, spurs his big buckskin into a breakneck gallop and rides for the Badlands below. Will the cowardly bullet that hurled Running Deer from his horse start an Indian massacre on the Lazy Y?
In the little white bungalow where the Smiths live, there's a family argument going on.
For heaven's sake, Bobby, haven't you finished your practicing yet?
No, I haven't. And what's more, I won't be finished for a whole half hour.
You're just being mean and you know it. You know I'm expecting Bill and Gus.
Yeah, and I know you're in love, and I know he's in love, and I know he's always hanging around, and I know...
Oh, Bobby, please don't tease me.
Aw, gee, sis, now don't cry. I'm sorry. Honest, I am. I'm glad I got a sister that's beautiful and that people fall in love with. Honest, I am.
Yes, Bobby's secretly proud of his sister. She's one of those girls who knows it's important to make the most of her good looks. Important to take wise, regular care of her complexion. She uses Lux toilet soap because its active lather does a thorough job of cleansing. Carries away every trace of dust, dirt, stale cosmetics. It's foolish to risk cosmetic skin. Dullness, little blemishes, enlarged pores. So use cosmetics all you like, but use Lux toilet soap regularly. It's worthwhile to care wisely for complexion beauty.
And now, back to our story. As Chief Big Horse kneels, horror-stricken beside Running Deer, he realizes that if his son is to live, he must receive immediate attention. Gently lifting the still form to the shoulders of his massive paint horse, he signals the Braves to ride on to the Lazy Y. The face of Chief Big Horse is immobile. Only his eyes reveal hate and revenge. Revenge on the people he believes responsible for this cowardly ambush. The Lazy Y riders. A few minutes later at the ranch house, the Indians, faces livid with anger, surround Gold Pan Jeffers as the old rancher examines the fallen Brave. Then Jeffers turns and speaks to the chief.
Well, he's still living, chief, but... mighty bad, mighty bad.
Then me take him back to my village. My medicine man make him well.
No, no, siree. If you move him now, he's going to die for sure. Now, wait a minute. I know something about doctoring, and I've got to probe for that bullet, and quick. Cyclone, go get that there first aid kit of mine and them doctor tools.
Yes, sir. I'm going to get it.
Charlie, give me a scad of hot water and clean towels.
Hold on. I'll go catch him. I'll be back very quickly.
Now, Chief Big Horse, how'd this here shooting happen?
We ride through pass. White man ambush my son.
Eh? A white man?
Me see white man ride away on high rim of Mesa. Now you and all white men shall pay.
Eh? All white men? Me? By jings, now that don't make no sense, Chief. That ain't good reasoning. You and me has always been good friends. Friends for years.
I, Chief Big Horse, take oath many moons ago. If one of my tribe be killed by white man's treachery, Ojibwa tribe shall make war to death.
Why, Dad, ratted think one of my riders would pull a trick like that. Now, you've got to listen here.
Say, Lawsy, here it is, all the stuff, Mr. Jeffers.
Huh? Well, this ain't no time for argument, I guess. Set that first aid box alongside her on India there, Cyclo.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Now, open her up. Every minute's going to count. Now, Chief, you and your braves are standing there scowling at us, ain't helping none. So I suggest you beat it for a while. Go on.
I go. Miktua Osu. Omaneya Skuga. Gijijuna. No, we go. But if your white medicine no bring life back to running deer before the sun set red in the sky, then white man's blood and Indian blood shall darken the earth. I have spoken.
Chief Big Horse and his braves thunder westward toward the Ojibwa village to prepare for sunset massacre of the white men. As the plume of their dust fades in the distance, Gold Pan Jeffers realizes the deadly seriousness of the chief's words. Quickly, a makeshift operating table is prepared. Cyclone, Charlie, and old Jeffers group around the still form, and the operation begins. Gently, old Gold Pan Jeffers sounds the wound in the young Indian's chest, praying that the answer will be, this young life may continue. Meanwhile, at the Ojibwa village, Chief Big Horse, bound by his oath that should ever one of his tribe be killed by a white man's treachery, he would make war, calls together his tribe.
Mektur Osinash Kuga, Onisu, sons of the Ojibwa, I know my son running deer is dying by white man's bullet. Now we'll ride on the war path against treacherous white dog. When the sun turn red, our tomahawk shall bite with great vengeance. Behold, braves of the Ojibwa. Already the sun grows yellow. Now, get away. Sound the war drums, we ride.
Led by the mighty Chief Big Horse, the Indian braves sweep from the Ojibwa village like a tidal wave of copper-colored vengeance, framed in the multicolored dress of their full war regalia. Back at the Lazy Y Ranch, Gold Pan Jeffers has successfully removed the bullet from Running Deer's chest. With anxious hearts, they await his return to consciousness, realizing, should this not take place by sunset, the Ojibwa Indians will surely strike to kill. At this same moment, a mysterious horseman streaks toward the Lazy Y. Mounted on a magnificent black mare, both rider and horse seem as one. The man garbed completely in black. Only the silver-encrusted gun swinging at his hips flash in the sinking sun.
Underlay! Underlay! Faster, my black beauty! Faster! Faster, Lorena! Faster! Run like the wind!
It's El Lobo, foe of evil, defender of right. It's El Lobo and the mighty mare, Lorena, fastest horse in all Mexico. Together, once more, they ride on the side of the law. As the first pink glow heralds sunset in the Arizona skies, El Lobo swings in through the rock entrance to the Lazy Y. He pulls the great black mare, Lorena, to a sliding stop before the ranch house. Dismounts and runs quickly to the main doorway.
Hi, James, it's El Lobo.
Si, Señor Jeffers. I am welcome at the Lazy Y, no?
Welcome, your dad. Burn right here. Come on in, come on in. By jings, you just come in time, El Lobo. I'm in a peck of trouble. Running deers in there, getting over a gun wound. He was...
I know, amigo. He was ambushed from the rim of the canyon.
Jumping Jehoshaphat. You know about it?
Si, senor. I see it happen. I'm right along on ridge. Then I see man on canyon. Get off a big buckskin horse and shoot down into the pass.
Sure. Did you recognize Maverick?
No, senor. It is too far away. But quickly, I ride over to where he was standing with his horse, and I find track. Very important one.
Yeah? What you find out?
That the horse he ride has a broken shoe on the left front foot.
A buckskin with a shoe that was broke.
Si, senor. I'm the only man who ride big buckskin around these parts. is Steve Cody.
Huh? Steve Cody. But how are you going to prove it?
By riding to the Silver Dollar Casino and check the left front foot on one buckskin, no?
Then, hello, Bo, you're going to have to hurry.
Why, amigo?
Because if Running Deer ain't back on his feet by sunset, Chief Big Horse has swore to massacre every man on this ranch.
The Indian, they are going the war path.
You betcha. And if and you can prove it was Cody and not one of my riders that fired that shot, I think we can stop them Injuns. But you got to do it before sunset.
Then, senor, we have not a second to spare. Only my great Mayor Lorena could make the run to Lone Pine and back here by sunset.
Well, what's your plan, El Lobo?
I ride to the Silver Dollar Casino, Steve Cody's hangout, senor, to trap the man I know is guilty of this crime. Until sunset. Adios, amigo. Adios. Andale. Andale. Faster, my black beauty. Faster. Faster, Lorena. Faster. Run like the wind.
Once again, El Lobo rides on the side of the law. The mighty Lorena, her flying hooves burning distance like a meteor of vengeance as she flashes northward in her battle with time. Will El Lobo trap the ruthless Steve Cody before sunset? Will Running Deer recover consciousness before the sun turns to a ball of red? Our next episode, The War Drums of Death. Be sure to listen for the next thrilling episode. El Lobo Rides Again is written and portrayed by one man, Charlie Lung. A man of 100 voices. Music by Rex Corey. Sound by Bob Conlon, Jack Robinson, and Rod Sutton. Production and direction by Larry Robertson. This is Ralph Langley speaking from Hollywood. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company. Listen to what Billboard, March 20th review, says about the Charlie Lung Show. Here's a kid show which closely approaches a radio version of the standard motion picture cliffhanger. Versatile Charlie Lung handles all the voices and scripting. Each clearly established and smoothly voiced. To create strong visual imagery, which complements Lung's multi-voicings, the show leans heavily on sound, using authentic tom-toms, six-shooters, and pounding horses throughout. It's the kind of stuff children eat up and should glue youngsters to their sets on Saturday morning.
You know, I guess just about the most popular sport in the world, everywhere in the world, is fishing. You hear a lot of discussion among American sportsmen, which is better, the dry fly or the wet fly, still fishing or trolling? Lake, stream, or ocean. Everyone has his own ideas about this sport of fishing, and he goes after it in his own way. Well, that's true all over the world. As our servicemen have observed, there are a lot of different ways of catching fish. In Borneo, for example, the natives crush the berries of a certain shrub, and the juice poisons the fish of a river without spoiling them as food. In Africa, South America, and Alaska, the spear or harpoon is used. In Japan, trained birds called cormorants are sent diving down into the water to bring up fish. In some Pacific islands, nets are used. In others, the bow and arrow is the favorite method of getting fish for supper. Well, what's true about fishing is true about other customs and traditions around the world. The way of doing things may be different, but the ideals are the same. No one way is right or wrong. It's just what suits the individuals best. These customs are important to the people who follow them. And our servicemen are helping to maintain goodwill by observing the customs of other people in other lands.
This is Brian Ahern speaking, and this is your Spotlight Story, transcribed from Hollywood. We're going to turn our story spotlight up towards a house on the edge of Kellam Pond in a valley of the Adirondacks. It had been deserted for many years, deserted, that is, except by a ghost. The average run-of-the-spook ghost story takes place way back in the distant past, in these jet-propelled, stereophonic, vaccine-inoculated days, and nights too, for that matter, a poor old specter hasn't got a chance. That's why the story I'd like to tell you now is a bit unusual, I think. It's about a ghost who did make an appearance in the present day. Matter of fact, he made this appearance up in the Adirondack Mountains of New York State just after the beginning of this very month. And there were three human beings involved in the story of this particular ghost. Three rather young human beings. One was Heather Gilchrist, age 12, or, as she preferred to think of herself, going on 13. And the second was Heather's brother, Paul, not in the least ashamed of admitting to 11. And the third was a very young friend of the Gilchrists with the imposing name of Christopher Lee Connery. Christopher Lee Connery was, and is, the ripe old age of 3. The Gilchrists lived during the winter months in the little community of Warrensburg, New York, in the heart of the resort area up near Lake George. During this summer, they took a few days' holiday from the family motor court on Warrensburg's Main Street and went to visit friends in a little cottage on nearby Kellum Pond. They spent their days swimming, fishing, mountain climbing, and playing with the 3-year-old son of their host and hostess. And just incidentally, they unearthed a ghost. Well, actually, they didn't discover the ghost himself right at the beginning. Their initial discovery was limited to his house, as likely a residence for a ghost as ever echoed the wail of a banshee. It was a battered cabin in the woods on the far side of Kellum Pond. On a night in the second week of August, the young Gilchrists, out for a sunset session with their fishing poles, heard the sound of footsteps echoing from within the cabin on the edge of the water. And without question, they accepted the fact that these footsteps were those of a ghost. There were several reasons why the 20th century Gilchrist youngsters came to the immediate conclusion that the eerie footfalls from within the cabin signified the presence of a being from another world. For one, they, like everyone else in the neighborhood, had often heard the story of the cabin. A man had been murdered there, it was said. A man had been murdered there, and the murderer had never been caught. The murdered man's body had been taken away from the cabin, but the rumors around Warrensburg were that his spirit hadn't been quite so quick to depart. It was the spirit of this same man who restlessly paced the battered floorboards of the house on August nights, the anniversary of the night of the murder. There was one reason that Heather and Paul Gilchrist were convinced of the presence of the ghost. The second reason was that there seemed to be no other explanation for the sounds. Every alternative idea suggested by the more skeptical grown-ups in the vacation party was quickly discarded. Oh, no, it hadn't been an echo from one of the occupied cabins along the water. No, it hadn't been the wind pushing a tree branch up against the house. No, it hadn't been any of the other lake youngsters playing a practical joke. Heather and Paul had investigated all of these possibilities carefully, very carefully. A third reason for their easy acceptance of the existence of the ghost was that Heather and Paul were very imaginative youngsters. And, as I said before, they were just 11 and 12 years old. Called by the disbelief of the adult members of their group, they decided to prove that their theory of the anniversary ghost was correct. How? By taking a picture of it with Paul's flash camera. There was only one hitch to the plan. They'd been left with the assignment of babysitting with 3-year-old Christopher Connery. They'd have to undertake the Lay the Ghost expedition with the rather underage assistance of a boy whose only qualifications for adventuring were his enthusiasm for the musical exploits of Davy Crockett. As it turned out, however, 3-year-old Christopher Connery emerged as the hero of the whole expedition. It was about 9 in the evening when Heather and Paul Gilchrist and young Christopher Connery bounced into the rowboat tied at the end of the pier and set forth towards the deserted house on the far side of Kellum Pond. The boatload of young spook-seekers crept closer and closer toward the deserted cabin. And just as soundlessly as they'd made their crossing over the surface of the pond, Heather and Paul Gilchrist managed to beach their boat. With barely a crunch, they pulled it far up on the sand and climbed out. They whispered secret instructions to Christopher. He was not to budge from his seat in the boat until they returned. And then Paul, carrying the camera, the intrepid brother and sister made their way up the bramble-ridden pathway toward the house. Well, at first they heard nothing. The windows of the deserted cabin were just as black as the night, and they heard not a sound from within the house, not even the swish of a night-flying bat. They stationed themselves at the edge of a clearing about 15 yards from the front of the cabin and prepared to wait. 5 minutes passed. 10 minutes. And then, in the middle of the blackness, they heard it. From the far side of the porch, they heard the sound of stealthy footsteps plodding slowly along the floorboards. Now, Paul's camera had been set to shoot long before he'd started on the boat ride across the pond. All he had to do was to raise it to eye level, point it in the direction of the footfalls, and press the shutter. But before he had a chance to perform even that simple gesture, he and Heather heard another sound, right behind them. There was a thrashing in the bushes, and then, suddenly, in a cheerful soprano voice, they heard three-year-old Christopher Connery singing out the chorus of Davy, Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. Well, at that, everything happened at once. Heather screamed, Paul's nervous finger clicked against the camera shutter, and a blinding flash of light struck into the night. The steady footfalls on the porch turned to a frantic, thunderous scuffling. And through it all came Christopher's merry voice singing, Davy, Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. And that was that. The ghost expedition was at an end. No more film, no more footfalls. The Gilchrists, Christopher in tow, sullenly rode back home. Now there was no hope of ever taking a picture of the ghost who haunted Kellam Pond. Well, several days passed before Heather and Paul made the discovery that their nighttime vigil had not gone unrewarded. They made this discovery when Paul picked up the prints from his roll of developed film. The first seven pictures were just as expected. One of Mother and Dad Gilchrist proudly smiling in front of the no vacancy sign at Gilchrist Manor back in Warrensburg. One of Christopher's mother napping in the porch swing. One of Christopher's father holding up a fish. Four of Christopher himself in various poses with a sandcastle. And then came number eight. On the last picture on the roll, flashed by accident because a little boy had scared the photographer with a chorus of Davy Crockett, they had a picture of the ghost of Kellam Pond. It was a surprisingly clear likeness of a very startled, very frightened young fawn. Well, that's the story of the laying of the ghost of Kellam Pond. Actually, there's a sequel to it, too. A rather nice sequel. Turned out that particular fawn was an orphan, abandoned by his mother and much in need of food. Flanked next time by grown-ups, the Gilchrists made another visit to the deserted cabin on a subsequent night and managed to make friends with the animal. They've been feeding it regularly for the past 3 weeks. Now, we are happy to report, both fawn and ghost hunters are doing well. And Christopher Connery still does a fine job on the chorus of Davy Crockett. Well, this is Brian Ahern saying that's the story for now.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio. We just heard Spotlight Story and the Ghost of Kellam Pond. Also, Charlie Long starred in El Lobo Rides Again. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, a chilling episode of The Hermit's Cave entitled The House on Lost Man's Bluff, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
And murders, too. The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. Have you heard the story? The house on Lost Man's Bluff, eh? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
For heaven's sake.
What is it, Denton?
Out of gas?
Couldn't be, Charles. Denton filled up at the last stop. What is it, Denton?
For heaven's sake, Nan, how do I know? Well, that's that.
Ooh, I hope we don't get stranded in this forsaken territory.
Well, that'd be something, wouldn't it? We haven't passed a house in the last 3 hours.
Well, I might as well get out and see what I can do.
You want me to take a look at it, Denton?
No. I'll tinker with it a while. You and Nan sit down on the side of the road.
I might be able to find the trouble for you, Dad.
Charles was only trying to help, Denton.
Never mind, I say. I'll have the thing going in a moment. Do as I say. Sit along the road. I'm going to work.
Come on, Charles. Let's do as he says.
Just as you say, Denton.
Here's a nice place to sit, Charles. We can look right down into a valley from here.
Why, it is nice, isn't it?
See? You can look all over the valley.
Wonder what they call this place.
I wouldn't know. Oh, look. We're not so far from civilization as I thought.
A town at the lower end of the valley.
Yes.
Now, that's still a long way away. You see? The road takes a roundabout way along the rim of the valley.
Uh-huh.
Say, I bet that's where I'm going to work.
Do you think so?
I'll just bet you that's where the job is that Denton got for me.
Way out? Away from everything?
Oh, I don't know. Looks like a nice little town. I'll make out all right.
I hate to have you leaving us, Charles. I'll be terribly lonesome.
Oh, I'll get back to the city occasionally.
You must be sure to do that.
Sure I will. Nan, Denton can't hear us talking from here, can he?
No.
I have a feeling that he managed this job for me way out here because he didn't want me living with you two anymore.
Oh, no, Charles. Why should he object to my own brother living with us?
You've got me there. I can't figure it out. When I first came to stay with you, Denton talked of getting me work close by.
I know he did.
Man, there's something strange about it.
I don't know exactly what you mean, Charles.
Yes, you do. Ever since Denton came back from that road trip, he's acted strange.
Now that you mention it, I think I have noticed something different about Denton.
He was jolly and friendly enough to me when I first arrived. And now all of a sudden he's changed.
Maybe we're imagining it all.
Doesn't seem that he'd be jealous of his wife's own brother, does it?
No. Denton's not like that.
But he has been for the last 10 days. Morose, sullen, sitting most of the time staring at me.
Maybe he feels I've been paying more attention to you than to him.
Maybe that's it.
It's only natural that I'd be solicitous of my own brother, whom I haven't seen for so many years.
We won't talk about it anymore. All I hope is that he isn't ill, that you aren't going to have trouble with me so far away.
You said we mustn't worry about it. We won't.
No.
I do wish he'd get the car started.
He wouldn't let me help him. Fairly pushed me away.
Denton's frightfully independent. But I wish he'd hurry.
Nervous?
I think we're going to have a storm. We should be getting out of these hills and down into town quickly.
Say, the sky is getting black and gloomy.
Look over to the west. Clouds are piling up fast.
Something of a wind coming up, too.
Denton just stands there looking at the car as if he didn't know what he was doing.
Maybe he doesn't. Well, let's go back over. Maybe you'll let me help him now.
All right.
Watch your step. There are jagged pieces of rock here.
That wind's getting stronger every minute.
It sure is. Looks like we might be getting a tornado. How are you making out, Denton?
What?
Located the trouble?
We should hurry, Denton. There's a terrific storm coming up fast.
Can't make the car go if it doesn't want to.
Look at the sky, Denton. We're in for a real storm.
Wow. There goes my hat. No use chasing it now.
Please, hurry. Get the car started.
All right. All right, get inside. Maybe it'll go now.
Let's hurry.
We'll have to drive like mad to get out of these hills and into the village before the storm breaks.
I know these roads. I'll get you out all right.
Denton, don't be so cross. Jump on every word Charles says.
Then don't give me orders.
The road and hurl us down the hill.
Wow. That was a peal of thunder.
Denton, we can't drive on in this.
No, I know we can't. What are we going to do, Dan? Can we sit in the car and be safe?
We aren't going to sit here. We're going to make for shelter.
But where?
There's a house sitting up there on the rock.
It's so dark, I can't see it.
There's a house up there. I got caught in a storm the last time I was through here. Climbed up to that house and stayed until it blew over.
Well, can we get up there all right?
We can make it. We'll have to. Get out of the car. We've got to start right away. Hurry. Climb out. Give me your hand, Dad.
It's in the middle of the afternoon and black as night.
Oh, we've got to climb fast. We'll all take hold of hands and start up the rock. We've got to get to that house. We've got to get there. Give me your hand, man.
Let's go. Hurry. Come on. We're here. Are you all right, Nan?
All right. Knock on the door, Dan.
We don't have to knock. We walk right in.
What?
Hurry. Get inside.
Boy,
what a relief. I thought for a few minutes we might not make it.
I'll bolt this door so the wind won't rip it open.
Who owns this place? Doesn't anyone live here?
There was no one living in it when I stopped on my way through here last time.
But it must belong to someone. It's completely furnished.
Whoever owns it hasn't been here for a long time, then. Everything's covered with dust and cobwebs. I can see them even in this pale light.
It's so dark in here. Can't you find a lamp or something, Denton?
I'll get a light. There's one in this room off the hall.
Come on, Charles, let's follow him. I don't like standing in this dark hall.
I found a lamp. I'll have it lighted in a moment.
Oh, it's so damp and cold in here. Ooh.
There. Huh. Light makes it better, doesn't it?
Some.
Maybe. I don't like the looks of this place.
At least we're out of the storm, Nan.
You stopped here on your last trip through, Denton, and there was no one living here then?
That's what I said, wasn't it?
But it's completely furnished. Surely someone lives here now.
Maybe they do. They aren't here now.
Almost like a dungeon in the room. Windows are built so high.
Something like a fort. But it's grand. Denton knew of this place. Its shelves were out of the storm. A wind couldn't blow this building over.
Denton?
What?
What are you staring at?
What?
You heard what I said. What are you staring out into the hall for?
Say, Dan, are you all right?
Don't clench your hands that way. What do you see?
Did I say I saw anything?
What's the matter with you?
Don't keep asking me questions. I've got you out of the storm. Isn't that enough? Now leave me alone.
Where are you going? Where are you going, Denton? Stop him, Charles.
Don't you think we all of us sit in here? When the storm blows over, we can drive on.
What's wrong with him? He's moving like a person in a trance. Get him to come back in this room.
Are you ill, Denton? Is there something we can do?
Stay right where you are. Both of you.
What is it?
I'm going into that room across the hall.
But why? Why don't we all stay together? It's dark in here. I don't like it. I want you to stay near me.
I said I'm going into that room across the hall. And I'm going alone. Your brother Charles will take care of you. You prefer his company, don't you?
Is that what's wrong with you? Why do you act this way toward my brother?
You might as well make up your minds, both of you, that we'll stay in this house until morning. I'm going into this room to sleep.
Denton!
It's no use.
He is ill.
He's got it in for me. Come on. Let's go back where the lamp is.
Listen. You hear what he's doing?
Barricading the door.
What does all this mean? Oh, Charles.
Let's get back to where the lamp is.
It's as if he's lost his mind.
Sit down. It's been coming on him for some time. Ever since he made that last trip through here. We know that.
What shall we do? Why did he go into that room and leave us?
As soon as we get into town, we'll persuade him to see a doctor. Let's make the best of it now. If he wants to leave us and sleep, let him.
Oh.
It's tough on you, Nan. I'm sorry I brought you all this trouble.
Denton's never been this way before. There's something dreadfully wrong. What was that?
Oh, is that Denton laughing?
No, it can't be. He's never laughed like that in his life.
Oh, it's coming from the room Denton went into. That's for sure.
He's going mad. Oh, Charles.
Come on. You'll have to let us in.
Denton? Denton, what is it?
Let us in. Dan, let us in.
Locked?
Bolted and barricaded.
Denton, please let us in. It is coming from in there. But it's not Denton. It can't be. Oh, what are we going to do? What shall we do?
Everything's all right now, Nan. He's quieted down.
He answered you the last time you went over to the room?
Yes. He said, "I'm all right. Go away."
Oh.
I think he's going to sleep now. We might as well do the same.
I can't sleep in this horrible house.
Yes, you can. It'll only be a few hours before morning.
But what if Denton refuses to come out of that room in the morning?
He'll be better in the morning. The storm's passed over, too. Everything will seem different in the morning.
Leave the lamp burning. I'm scared.
Sure. I'll set it on the mantel. It won't bother our eyes, but it will shed some light.
Yes, that will be all right. You think Denton will sleep?
I think he's asleep now. I'd break the door down, Nan, if I thought it would do any good. But I think it's best to let him get over this spell by himself.
I'll never believe it was he laughing.
Who could it have been but Denton? Oh, now, don't worry anymore. Try to get some sleep. If he calls out, I'll wake you up.
It seems like a nightmare, doesn't it?
It will in the morning. Everything will be different then. Go to sleep now. You need the rest. What is it?
Wake up. There's someone standing over you.
What?
Wake up. There's someone standing over you. They're going to kill you. Help!
Good heavens. What is it? What was that?
Oh, Charlie. He stood right over you with his hands reaching out for you.
Who?
And when I screamed, he ran.
For heaven's sake, who?
He was going to kill you.
Charles, ready to kill him, eh? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
Now, back to the hermit.
Terror-stricken, Charles and Nan stand in the middle of the room in this strange house on Lost Man's Bluff, wondering who tried to kill Charles. Listen.
You mean you think it was...
I know it was Denton.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Denton trying to kill me.
I know it was he. With his hands reaching out for your throat.
Oh, no.
And when I screamed, he ran back into that room and closed the door. Charles, where are you going?
I'm going to get him out of that room before something really happens.
You mustn't go near him.
I've got to. No, you stay here.
Never. I'm going with you.
I'm going to make him let me in there.
He may try to kill you again.
I don't think he will. You stay behind me. Denton? Denton!
Denton!
The door's unlocked. Denton? Denton? Stay back, Nan. I'm going to light a match. Great heaven! Denton!
What is it?
Get back. Don't look.
Why are you closing the door? What is it, Charles? What did you see?
No. Denton's...
Something's happened to him. Something's happened to Denton. What is it, Charles? Tell me quick. What is it?
Denton's hanged himself. Keep hold of yourself, Nan. We've got to get out of here. Down into town and get the authorities here.
Denton. Denton's hanged himself.
Let's hope the car runs. We've got to get into town. The laughter again.
Look. Look. Up at the top of the stairs.
What is it?
In this faint light, it looks like the figure of a man.
Yes. But you can see right through him. He's disappeared.
Standing there at the head of the stairs, pointing at us. Then vanished.
That same laughter.
Charles, you're not going up there. We're going to get out of this place right away and get help. Quick, hurry, we must get help.
But I tell you, it's urgent. You've got to go up there right now.
Go up to that house on Lost Man's Bluff before daybreak?
Right now.
Oh, no. Not me.
But my husband is dead in that house.
Would never enter the door of that house at night. No, sir. Neither would anyone else in this town.
Denton is dead.
He ain't the first one to die up there.
What do you mean?
Ain't never heard of the house on Lost Man's Bluff?
No. We don't live around here.
Oh, well, that explains that.
What did you mean when you said that Denton was not the first man to die there?
5 years ago, a fella that owned that house killed his brother, then hanged himself.
What?
That's right. But hanging didn't seem to take him out of this world. Now, I ain't the only one that's been there, passed there at night and heard his wild laughter. It's fit to make the hair stand right up on a man's spine.
Oh.
Other folks tried to live in that house, But you know what happens to them when they go in a certain room in that house?
The room Denton tried to sleep in?
The desire to kill enters in them. And the laughter of him that belongs to the other world drives them mad. They can't get away from it. They return to the place.
Charles, that's what happened to Denton. He said he'd been in that house before.
They try to kill, if there's anyone near to kill. And then they take their own lives. It's happened to three other people. One man got back to town and told his experience. But he went back up there a few weeks later and took his life. Hanged himself. Oh, no, sir. You'll have to wait till morning. Won't get nobody to go up there in the night to that house on Lost Man's Bluff.
From the house on Lost Man's Bluff continues to pierce the night. Don't ever go near it after sundown. No. Turn on your lights. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
Characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY. We just heard an episode of The Hermit's Cave entitled The House on Lost Man's Bluff, first broadcast on radio on April 20th, 1947. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM, and online at wmky.org.